Turkey hunting is one of my favorite things. And one of the key tools I use for turkey hunting is the Onyx Hunt Map. I use it incessantly when I'm hunting turkeys. Being able to find a new piece of public or gaining permission on private opens up opportunities for gobblers. Onyx Hunt has a special offer for you this spring. Use the code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. You'll find more birds this season. I'm telling you, I rely on Onyx Hunt when I'm hunting turkeys. It is an invaluable turkey hunting tool.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you want to go further and add some fun and versatility into your hunting program, check out Can-Am's Defender. Pretty soon I'm headed to my buddy Doug's, and we're going to be running around in Doug's Can-Am because it's like, it's fun. You can get around quietly, easily, all over his property. It's just versatile. Oh, I love it. To find your next Can-Am or to shop online and get serious about backcountry travel, visit CanAmOffroad.com. Turn something that you kind of dread driving around into something you love. Visit CanAmOffroad.com.
It's a Meat Eater podcast.
Welcome to Meat Eater Trivia, the only game show where conservation always wins. I'm your guest host, Brody Henderson, and today we're joined by Steve, Giannis, Spencer, Randall, Mackenzie, Mark, Chester, and Maddie.
It's a little bit public radio-ish when Brody does it.
I like public
radio.
But
he's not bringing it. He's not bringing it like Spencer.
You know what? You know what, Steve? I was going to ask you how you think I'm going to do hosting, but I'm just going to skip that part.
He's kind of got the vocal fry.
My headphones aren't turned up that loud.
Vocal fry, right?
Can you turn my headphones up louder so he sounds more like he's bringing it?
Yeah, sure.
Age-old tradition, turning up Steve's headphones.
If you're not familiar, this is a 10-round quiz show with questions from Meat Eater's four verticals, which are hunting, fishing, conservation, cooking, and whatever else Spencer decides to throw in there. Mm-hmm. And there is a prize. Meat Eater will donate $500 to the conservation organization of the winner's choosing. Steve, how do you think I'm doing?
Just not bringing it. You know, I mean, the material's all good. It's just not like...
You know what I didn't like about when you hosted?
I brought it too much?
I didn't like it when you said, everyone knows, at the beginning of every one of your questions. Moving on.
Well, but Brody is dressed sharp. He's wearing a suit and tie. Brody, like, how many days a year do you wear a suit and tie?
The last time I wore one was at Seth's wedding.
Okay, so once a year or so.
Yeah. Did you wear that suit and tie?
I did. Same thing. I took most of it off a couple hours in.
There's still a little bit of red wine
on
it.
He dug around under his bed. And he's like, there it is.
Taking this very seriously.
Yeah. Okay, for the stat of the week, this week we're looking at the worst performances by the best players. Hmm. These are the games where our top competitors had their lowest scores.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
First up is me. My worst performance of all time was in episode 347, where I got two correct answers. And Cal won with 5.
Go.
Steve's worst performance came in the same game, and he got 3 answers. Giannis, his worst was 2 in episode 287, and the winner was Steve, who got 5.
Did Corinne beat him in that round?
I don't know. You have to ask Spencer. Randall's worst performance was in episode 469, hosted by Giannis. He got 2 right. Spencer won with 4. It was like the hardest game of trivia ever. There you go. Worst performances. Spencer, has anyone ever had a 0?
Oh, yeah. We've had 0s before. Phil is usually gracious enough to not acknowledge it if someone is throwing an imperfect game. I think he just leaves them off the updates once we hit question 8.
I appreciate that, Phil.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Looking out for a second.
They just kind of go away.
Yeah.
Here's our infrequently asked question segment. If you have a trivia related question for our crew, send it to trivia@themeateater.com with the subject line IFAQ. Ryan from Michigan asks, have you guys ever checked to make sure Brody isn't a test subject for Elon Musk's Neuralink? It's suspicious how much he knows.
Brody picked that question.
I did. Well, Ryan, thanks for your question and the wonderful compliment. To answer your question, Elon Musk can't design a four-wheel drive pickup truck that doesn't get stuck in 4 inches of snow. So there's no way I'm test driving one of his mind control devices. Got anything to say about that, Steve?
No, it was great hosting.
They just installed the first Neuralink this week. Past week.
Yeah, well,
I was going to say we'd be able to tell if they'd stuck something in Brody's head.
Yeah.
They leave a scar, you're saying?
Yeah.
You get a lot of scars when you're bald. Stand up and hit your head on shit. It's rough. Okay, for housekeeping this week, a couple of games back, Spencer played a little dirty pool and asked the question, what nine-letter word describes a relationship between two organisms in which each benefits? The answer was mutualism, but most folks answered with symbiotic or symbiosis, which just happened to also be nine-letter words. But despite our arguing, Spencer's question was legit, and the correct answer was mutualism. Here's why. Symbiosis is a relationship between two organisms that can be mutualistic, in which both organisms benefit, commensal, in which one benefits, or parasitic.
That's not true.
Moving on.
I'll also point out Brody wrote that section himself. So those were not my words coming out of Brody's mouth.
Housekeeping is meant to be punching up and not punching down at the contestants, right? I feel like this sort of seems like an odd slot for a little victory lap here.
Well, the one part was self-serving, but that part's not self-serving because he was arguing against it.
Mm.
No, it's not. It's in service of Spencer's.
We're a little hard on him sometimes. He deserves a little credit for his work.
Now that he's in the host chair, he feels like
you're using a mouthpiece. It's a lot of pressure up here.
Yep.
Brody, I want to know how much time you invested in preparing today's game. It took a lot longer than I thought it would.
Yeah, I mean, I started with a lot of questions and weeded some out and then put them back in.
Did you dip into the listener questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some rich ones, good ones in there, man.
But the challenge is like finding questions where you know certain people aren't going to get like it's hard, right?
Like trying to make it that Randall can't
win. Steve's going to know that. Mm-hmm. This is a history question. I'm not asking it. Randall will get it right. Mm. But you also can't throw
Was there anything that you didn't put down because you thought, say, Giannis would get it right?
Yeah, I had a mountain lion question in there. Mm.
Did you pull any Chester questions?
I'm not sure.
I can't picture someone saying, I'm not putting that in there because Chester would get it right. I just don't think people would do that to Chester. I feel like they'd be like, you know, I'm going to leave that in. Chester might get that.
No, I don't disagree with you. I appreciate all the help I can get.
No one is glad to see Chester fail.
I think Chester would do all right this round. The carry index for today is a 3.5. So our winner should get at least 7 correct answers.
If I was the guy that came up with all the stats, I would do, after a number of guest hostings, I would find out the relative
accuracy
of the...
I think you've done something like that.
Have you done that?
Well, I've done it on the Shelby Index, but I haven't done the Katy Index.
The Katy Index was like 0.5.
Yeah.
1.5. I can't remember if it was 1.5 or 0.5.
I was being generous on the 0.5. So
okay.
It's really a 3?
Maybe. Okay, you guys ready?
Ready.
Yes, sir.
Jeez, don't sound so excited.
Very ready.
For question one.
Hold on, we got to get a
drop?
We got to tell Phil to play the drop.
Oh, most important part. Play the drop, Phil.
Look, I'm... need to know what I stand to win.
Everything.
How's that?
You stand to win everything.
Game on, suckers!
You know, Brody wearing that suit to harken back to game show hosts?
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I don't think you'd be able to do, you might be able to dress the part, but I don't think that you'd be able to come out during the intro music and do any kind of little physical banter.
Dance?
They'll do little dances. They have
it's like a light jog.
A light jog. Mm-hmm. Point to a couple people.
You mean because I'm out of shape?
Just wouldn't be your style.
No,
I think you'd come out and just get started.
Yep.
Confusing it with more of like a late night TV show?
No, they all do that. No, because they got to come out. They come out and there's
they
got to
rile people up.
They come out and do a little thing.
Stupid. I guess I don't watch enough of that.
Okay, question one. The category is weird names for groups of animals.
This is a new topic.
It's great. What is a group of javelinas called?
Son of a bitch.
A, a romp. B, a squadron. C, a pack. Or D, a sounder. It's up there if you need to look.
Yanni was so amused by Brody's outfit that he took a grip and grin with him when he got in the studio. He stood behind Brody, gave a thumbs up.
Might have to put that picture up in here if there's any room left.
Did anyone else have the sense that like he's not wearing a matching thing beneath the suit coat? Like I feel like he's wearing like jean shorts or something.
He's wearing rubber boots in like work pants.
Yeah, very flexible. Yeah. Brody, I don't know.
I'm not like those newscasters are like on Zoom or whatever, and they got a pair of boxers on and nothing else.
I'll likely have a little feedback for you on this one.
Mm. You have it right?
At least, I'll just hang tight.
Okay.
Haven't even gotten past the first question, and we're already getting the feedback. The category is weird names for animal groups. What is a group of javelinas called? A romp, a squadron, a pack, or a sounder?
Yeah, I read it a lot because people will complain, apparently.
Yeah. My kid got in a little trouble for not taking enough time on his tests. They're like encouraging the kids to use the entire class, and he took one test in 4 minutes.
Whoa. How'd he do on the test?
He did good.
Okay.
Then what's the problem?
I don't know.
Could have done better, maybe.
It might make the other kids feel bad.
Yeah.
It's probably
But the teacher had them timing themselves.
Mm.
You ready?
Nope.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay, the answer. Spencer, squadron. Chester, romp. Mark, sounder. Randall, pack. Mackenzie, romp. Maddie, sounder. Giannis, sounder. Steve, sounder. You're all wrong. The answer is B, squadron.
Oh, Spencer, I got
that. Oh. I'm not used to Spencer sitting there. Good job, Spencer.
Well, I'll tell you why I wrote what I wrote.
It doesn't matter why. go ahead.
Because there's a lot of, pigs are sounders.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And of course, these are peccaries, not pigs, but there's still a lot of people, there's still a lot of things that people refer to them like pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Follow me?
Yep. Also known as skunk pigs or muskog. Javelina have glands that emit a strong odor when alarmed, but they are not actually pigged. They're collared peccaries, a species native to southern Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Mexico, Central, and South America. They're also social animals like pigs that travel in groups or squadrons of 6 to 10 animals, and they're sometimes known for being aggressive. In the Tucson, Arizona area, javelinas attack people every 3 to 6 months, usually when they're walking dogs. The javelina are likely defending themselves the same way they would against predators like coyotes. If you want to see Steve get charged by a squadron of mean-ass skunk pigs, go check out Meat Eater Season 3, Episode 6 on our YouTube channel.
Spencer, did you know that?
When he was reading the question, I knew it was with an S, and sounder to me, I knew it was pigs, and it also sounded like that'd be like dolphins or something like that. So then I went with squadron.
Hmm.
Awful quiet over there, Steve.
Well, he got it right, but he kind of arrived at it dumb. What? Like I got it wrong, but I arrived at it well. Follow me.
Okay. Moving on to question two. The category is fishing for folks who like to let fish go. name four of the five major categories of flies used to catch trout.
What?
Four or five categories.
This isn't gonna work.
Maybe not for you.
Well, so it's not.
I might categorize my flies differently.
Well, yeah, and what you could, there's a category where it's just bifurcated into two.
I love this.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is tricky.
Are we sure there's five?
We'll get to that. Name four of the five major categories of flies used to catch trout.
Does it make any sense? It's not wet. It's not wet and dry.
I'm like halfway there.
Well. Could be.
Wet and dry?
The first one looks good.
That's
the
two.
One.
That's bifurcated.
You guys
two.
Need to cut the chit
hand
chat.
Hand out some hints, he says. Okay.
Or not, if your fellow players would like to encourage chit chat, go for it.
Brody, I have some feedback. I like your category names.
Yeah.
I like how they're specific and they're not. Kind of BS, like sometimes Spencer kind of finagles some
I'll let
things
Spencer address that.
General.
Yeah, maybe I should. Maybe that should be a new installment. It's just getting very specific and weird with the categories. I'm not going to get this one right. How I would create no wiggle room on a question like this, Brody, if I were doing hosting, I would be like, name four of the five major categories of flies according to Field and Stream. Then Steve can't argue with you. You can't be like, right. Well, Steve, you gotta, you know, this is what Field and Stream said. This is what Orvis said, whoever.
Well, yeah, I also feel like there's two different ways, very obvious ways you could categorize flies. Like, are you going by what they're meant to imitate, or are you going by how they're tied?
Yeah.
I'd say just let us get it wrong.
It's too late. It's too late to improve this question.
I don't think it needs improvement myself, but you can argue all you want. Okay. Spencer, nymph, dry fly, terrestrial, subsurface. Chester, nymph, streamer, dry fly, wet flies. Mark, dry, nymph, streamer, wet. I can't see that far.
Dry, nymph, streamer, hopper.
Moving on, Mackenzie, dry nymph, streamer, worm. Maddie, dry, wet, black, white. Dry, wet, nymph, terrestrial, streamer. Is that four?
It's four.
Okay.
Oh, well, I don't know, Yanni.
Do I need to choose one here?
He just shotgunned it. But
if it's four, then there's a bunch of people
pick
have
four,
three.
Giannis.
I'm going with nymph over wet.
Steve has terrestrial, stonefly, mayfly, can't even see.
Caddis.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of train. Really it was wrong. Like two types of thinking. That thinking and this type.
Yeah.
And then
but
the Brody thinking.
Nope.
Which is what?
No.
Let's find out.
Okay. The answer is nymphs, dry flies, wet flies, streamers, and emergers.
No!
Not terrestrials?
It's a dry fly,
they
sonny.
They fall under dry fly.
According to Orvis, there are four main types of trout flies, but many other sources, myself included, consider emergers as a fifth distinct type of dry of trout fly.
Okay, so if we got three of four, can we still get 1 point according to Orvis?
No.
However, like if I were fishing BS. An emerger, I would use soft tackles a lot, which is under the category.
But that's
of
a wet fly. A wet okay, fly. Let's. I'll explain it. Okay, can we allow the little tidbit? Nymphs are subsurface flies that imitate subadult aquatic insects such as mayflies and caddisflies. They often have a metal BDAD flash and weight and are fished under a bobber or strike indicator. Wet flies are the oldest type of trout fly. Many, like the Royal Coachman, are very colorful but don't look much like a real insect. Other wet flies called soft tackles are made up of just a thread body and a single wrap of soft tackle, which are feather fibers that look like the legs and antenna or wings of aquatic insects. Dry flies float on the surface to imitate adult aquatic insects, as well as terrestrial insects like ants, grasshoppers, and even mice. Streamers imitate more active food sources like baitfish, sculpins, leeches, and crayfish. They are retrieved like lures, such as plugs and spoons. A fifth category of trout flies called emergers imitates a very specific stage of a hatch when insects, aquatic insects, are shedding their exoskeleton and struggling to emerge from the water's surface film.
Yanni, you agree?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But you got that one wrong?
I did.
So who got that right?
Chester.
Chester and Mark.
Mark.
Oh,
really? Wow. You guys didn't put down terrestrial.
So close.
Oh, because you guys, yeah, I'm kind of surprised you're giving wet fly and nymph. I mean, I understand.
They're different, man.
They are different, but it's like in a category way, they're not.
But if you go to a fly catalog.
Oh, I understand. No, I know that.
Okay. Nothing to say over there, Steve?
No, something's wrong with our dog. I got to talk about our dog.
Okay.
I already diagnosed it.
Okay.
That's good.
Ate your beaver lure?
No, it ate a beaver pelt.
Oh. Okay.
Yikes.
It chewed one up dry.
Okay. That's too bad, but.
Who takes responsibility for that?
Someone's walking it right now, and they said it's just a really unusual movement, bowel movement. And they're wondering if they should take her to the vet over this.
What's the verdict? Let it play out?
I just told him what it was.
Okay.
Which I wanted to whoop her over, but it was my fault.
You can't whoop dogs no more, Steve.
That's what we were laughing about, because you used to beat him with a rolled up newspaper, and now you got to like go on Amazon and try to find a rolled up newspaper. Because you don't even have one anymore. You'd sell like a rolled up newspaper for old fashioned dog whooping.
That's great. That's great. Okay, question three. The category could be wild game cooking, or it could be conservation. So let's call it cookservation.
Very good.
Up until 1972, the Campbell Soup Company produced soup using meat from this species of reptile, which is now considered a threatened species by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. I am going to tell you guys, you need to be specific, as in white-tailed deer, not deer.
No problem. You know this, Steve?
Yeah, I know it. Real good.
Real good.
Okay.
I'm coming back.
Tough game Brody's pitching here. You better ask it again.
Up until 1972, the Campbell Soup Company produced soup using meat from this species of reptile, which is now considered a threatened species by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. You ever get
your hand? Now considered a threatened species by many people, me included.
Mm-hmm.
Like his last question.
You ever get your hands on one of these, Steve?
I'm not talking about it.
Hinty hint.
Yeah.
Randall doesn't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Randall was complaining earlier that you guys were out in the hallway chatting and not in here. Focused,
prepping.
Getting ready. Zeroing in on the game.
And
man,
I said,
I'm
it's
going to
be really unfortunate if one of those
You're not
guys...
repeating it enough, probably.
I already repeated it a lot twice. Does anybody need to hear it? I'm really worried I'm going down the Giannis hosting route where this is too hard.
Four correct answers won that game.
Maybe you guys are just having an off day.
Up until 1972, the Campbell Soup Company produced soup using meat from this species of reptile, which is now considered a threatened species by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Good co-hosting. Nice, Steve.
Helping them out.
Everybody ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hold on, I gotta finish writing something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, reveal your answers. We have Spencer saying softshell turtle, Chester saying snapping turtle, Mark saying gopher tortoise.
I didn't finish, I was rewriting my answers.
He was going for loggerhead turtle, Komodo dragon from Mackenzie, rattlesnake, Giannis saying blue iguana, Steve saying terrapin. God. The answer is alligator snapping turtle.
Oh!
Oh, not snapping turtle, huh?
I feel like that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty darn.
Because terrapin soup was a very, well, it doesn't matter. They didn't make it.
Okay.
I feel like you should have got that one.
Alligator snapping turtles, which can reach weights of over 150 pounds, provided a much greater quantity of meat than smaller turtles and were easy to catch for commercial trappers who got paid a per pound rate. Commercial turtle trapping operations strongly focused on big alligator snapping turtles, causing a huge population crash in many areas of the Gulf Coastal Plain. That led to commercial harvest bans and the recent proposal to list the alligator snapping turtle as a threatened species. Only Mississippi and Louisiana still allow limited recreational harvest of alligator snappers. We don't have any alligator snapping turtle soup recipes on the website, but you can learn all about catching, cleaning, cooking, and eating their smaller cousins, the common snapping turtle, in Kubi Brown's Meat Eater article, How to Catch, Clean, Cook, and Eat Snapping Turtles.
Brody, in your research, did you find out what recipe it was that they were slipping snapping turtle meat into?
Well, I'm sure it was just turtle soup.
They sold that?
They came right out with it.
I used to get a buck a pound dress, so you had to take the top shell off.
You'd be like, Campbell's identified as turtle soup. It wasn't just a seafood chowder or something like that.
Are you 100% sure that they just use alligator snapping turtle and not the common?
They used alligator snapper up until 1972.
And common wouldn't be threatened.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I'd argue too if I was you, Chester.
You can argue.
If I was you, Chester, I'd be like,
look, I'll defer to the group if they want Chester to get it right.
If I was Chester,
he
wrote snapping turtle.
No, because he just clarified you can't do that.
But if I was Chester, I'd say, well, Brody, that's the same as saying white-tailed deer. It'd be like if you were looking for coos deer instead of white-tailed deer. That's what I'd say if I was Chester.
No,
no,
because the coos deer is a white-tail. But alligator snapper is not a northern or common snapping turtle.
I think his answer was to the level of specificity as white-tailed deer. That's my point. But I'm not Chester, so I'm not going to argue on
that. Bill, give him the answer.
I don't need the answer.
Brody, I think you set the parameters very clearly. I say it's a no.
Okay.
Bill says not no. Sea turtle.
Well, you guys are in trouble on this next one.
Oh, great. Oh, no.
The category for question four is wildlife. What species of canid is the most widely distributed terrestrial mammalian carnivore in the world?
How specific do we need to be?
What do you want for an answer?
I don't know. I guess I'm not looking for one.
How specific do we need to be on this one?
You're not looking for a Latin answer.
No. Common name.
I got it down to two.
Man, I'm never going to host this game again.
Probably not. Probably not.
I am learning a lot. I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Just not scoring very much.
I enjoy when my critics have to take the hosting seat. As Brody being one of the top three critics, this is good. I like this.
I've got some softballs lined up for
Do
next
you?
Time you invite me.
Okay.
Yeah, buddy. It's going to be
just play like a 20-question game that just has really easy questions.
Yeah, and everybody will leave with a trophy.
Just rapid fire, yeah. No score either.
What species of canid is the most widely distributed terrestrial mammalian carnivore in the world?
This is, I believe, the 99th episode that Brody is hosting today. So we got a special episode for 99 and then a special episode for 100 next week as well.
Ready?
If everyone's ready, flip them over. Spencer says fox.
Ooh.
Chester says cricket. Mark says gray fox. Randall says domestic dog. Common
can we go back to Chester for a second?
Yeah. I don't want to just move past that one because
a cricket. A cricket. They're carnivores too, apparently. Right?
Manny, what
he
you
might
got?
Be still
they're, to be fair, they're mammals.
Giannis says gray wolf. Steve says wolf. What'd you have in there?
Red fox. But now I'm realizing you're probably gonna go with just pet dogs.
No.
Oh.
Mm. Fox.
I thought it.
What
fox?
What fox?
Woo. Red fox.
Red fox.
Yep.
So I had it right.
Yep.
What?
You know, just everyone take note. I did have it right.
You did have it right.
Are domestic dogs canids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no
they're terrestrial mammalian carnivores as well, right?
There's no way there's more red foxes than
widely
distributed.
No,
way more dogs.
I feel like that's...
You think it should be the household dog?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that he might have been
wherever there's folks.
I thought there was gonna be a trick question. It would be dogs as well.
And then I was gonna ask the clarifying question: How
they're not
narrowly defined is the category of wildlife?
Pet dogs aren't carnivores.
Yeah, they are.
No, they eat mostly like whatever dog food,
processed things.
Not a lot of dogs running around up above the Arctic Circle. Either.
I think I'm getting a zero.
Oh, sure.
Do I get that right for just having fox?
No. Okay. Definitely not. Arctic fox, gray fox, red fox.
I asked how specific I need to be, and he didn't answer.
No.
I don't
even know.
I can go and explain myself, but
there's as much chance of you getting it as Chester gets it for writing cricket.
I don't think that's true at all.
Well, I just, for some reason, saw terrestrial, and my brain immediately wrote down cricket. Because
so that wasn't a joke?
He was thinking about flies.
So
he was thinking about fly fishing.
Yeah, he's still stuck in fly fishing.
He would put hopper down there.
Well, you know, he's closer if you're thinking about
flies. I was thinking, what's the highest distributed terrestrial out there? And I was thinking cricket right now because of all the protein market that they use it for. I skipped over canid and mammalian.
If you put all the beetles in the world in one pile? And all the mammals in the world in another pile, the beetle pile would be bigger than the mammal pile.
Oh, no, that's so gross.
I did not know that.
Well,
that makes your skin crawl.
Red foxes are distributed across the entire northern hemisphere from the Arctic Circle to southern North America, Europe, North Africa, the Asiatic steppes, India, and Japan. They were also introduced to Australia, where they've established themselves throughout much of that continent as well.
So I got that right, right?
No, you wrote fox. Did you mean Arctic fox?
No, I meant the correct answer, which I asked.
Did you mean
Brody.
Gray fox?
I said, how specific, Brody?
I didn't say specific.
No, I know.
Did you mean kit fox?
Didn't answer
did
at
you
all.
Mean kit fox? Well, when I wrote red fox, I wrote red fox. I crossed it out, but that's what
and
I wrote.
He got it wrong.
Yeah. Brody, you gonna give it to Spencer?
No.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
No.
Desert.
Oh, he must have meant the desert swift fox.
All right. I guess Chester didn't get the whitetail
Sorry,
snapping
Spencer.
Turtle. Right. Okay. All right.
Did anyone get it?
Nope.
Nobody.
I think I'm 0 for 4.
I think there's a good reading of this question that would make the domestic dog the correct answer.
100%.
Nah. Not buying it. The category for this.
I think you're right. Oh, go on.
The category for this next question is cool things about antlers.
How did that last question only get to be wildlife category?
I don't know. I got bored with trying to figure
many
out.
Many people, including me.
Because he wanted to rule out domestic dog.
Hey. Randall's getting a little angry back there.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here on a goose egg. You know?
You too.
This chair is feeling rather uncomfortable.
Maybe we'll go end with a few zeros.
We can only hope.
Okay. Next question is cool things about antlers. What is the technical term for the strings of round beads and bumps at the base of the antlers?
You know this, Mark?
Yeah.
Or maybe you just think you do.
Possibly.
You ought to read that question pretty closely. I tried really hard, Spencer, to, you know, provide info in the questions.
I believe you. Listen, selfishly, this is very satisfying for me. If our guest host does a poor job, which maybe
I don't think I'm doing a poor job. No, I think you guys are.
Yeah.
Well,
he's got a point.
What do you got, Steve?
I got this one wrong.
Okay. Me too.
What is the technical term for the strings of round beads and bumps at the base of antlers?
I feel like a lot more people in this room should know the answer.
So do I.
Yeah, I agree.
Or maybe they do, and I'm just on my own.
Everyone ready? Giannis, no?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
You know what Dirt's dad used to use for chapstick?
I think it was his grandfather.
His grandfather. Earwax.
Oh.
Ew.
Where'd that come from?
Yeah, his own.
He was telling me that.
But earwax tastes so bad.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know?
Steve's so disinterested in this episode of trivia.
Isn't that wild? He'd dig his own earwax out and put it on his lips.
So who's got his such dry lips that Steve noticed and thought that in his mind?
It just like,
how did that
me.
Happen?
I've just been thinking about it a lot since he told me that.
Frugal bunch, that family.
Oh, you guys ready?
Dirt's dad tried to learn how to make his own pellet grill pellets, and he tried to learn how to make his own dip. Yeah, they don't like buying stuff, man, especially chapstick, apparently.
Guess not.
Mark, let's Flip see what over. You got.
Spencer says burr. Chester says burr. Mark pearls. Says pearls. Randall
clutch
says,
my pearls.
Mackenzie, nothing. Maddie says sis. Giannis peduncle. Steve burrs with one R.
The spelling doesn't matter.
We have a right answer.
Uh-oh. Burrs.
It's pearls.
Pearls. Pearls. Good job, Mark.
Thank you.
These small bead-like structures form in rows like a string of pearls around the base section of the antler. Hmm. The bumpy surface they create is believed to aid in creating rubs on trees that spread scent to communicate with other deer. It may also be an indicator of good nutrition. If they're absent or faint, a buck may have had poor nutrition. Though young bucks tend to have less pearling than older bucks.
I feel like muleys have less of them, or no?
Not the one That's my kid question. Shot this past fall.
That was a good question. Kind of.
That was good.
You had me second guessing myself, though, when Steve's like, are you sure about that? Then I sat here
well,
sweating.
I meant that he was going to go like, well, that's not what I call him.
Hey, Phil.
I call him lower junk.
Does anybody have any questions,
that's something
right,
different.
Phil? We're halfway through.
Yeah, well, I'll just do it the typical way. We've got Giannis, Mackenzie, Maddie, Randall, and Steve all tied up with 0 points.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Chester and Spencer have one, and Mark is blazing a trail. He's got 2 points in first place.
Mm. All right, Mark, way to go.
Anybody's game. Anybody's game.
Yep. Could pour it on the next half.
Mm-hmm.
I thought with my long history with Brody that I would, you know,
mm-hmm.
have you a know what? Bit There's a advantage. Question coming up about our long history.
Oh, don't there like that.
Oh, I look forward to that question.
The answer isn't dogs, in case you're wondering.
Well, at least there's one question. The right answer is dogs.
Yeah, I've said it before and I'll say it 1,000 times more. If you got a family and you got people that rely on you, you need to take life insurance seriously. And Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. So with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million in coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Your life insurance policy, you know, that you get at work may not offer enough protection for your family's needs. Policy Genius gives you unbiased advice from a licensed expert support team. Now, this is super convenient, right? Because a lot of times, you know, something like life insurance, you're just going to put it off because you're like, when will I ever have time to do that? I don't even know who to talk to about it. Well, this helps you do it online. Okay, again, you're comparing options from top companies, all right? Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes
and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Hey, everybody, I'm talking here about Montana Knife Company from our very own state of Montana. This company was founded by one of the most experienced master bladesmiths in the world, Josh Smith, who over recent months I've become friends with. And my God, have I learned a lot about knives from this guy. Just a phenomenal hometown company that makes world-renowned knives. Josh has been making knives for 30 years. You get one of these knives up and open it, it is sharp like something that came from outer space. And here's the deal. They make knives that can be sharpened. You can work on these knives. If you don't want to work on them, you send it to them and they'll work on it. They'll get it sharp. Phenomenal hunting knives. If you want to see them in action, we just did, me and John Hayes, the taxidermist, just did a video about how to properly skin a black bear. Watch that video, and in that video, you'll see Montana Knife Company knives in action. MKC products usually sell out in minutes of being released, which is true. But now, for the first time, they're dabbling with having knives in stock on their site. So right now, you can grab yourself a Blackfoot 2.0 or the Ultralight Speed Goat. Use code MEATEATER, and you get 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company. Working knives for working people. 10% off with the code MEATEATER. That's a good deal. Applying for tags each year in the West can be daunting. Yeah, I apply for everything everywhere. It's daunting. You have to go to a variety of sources to formulate your best guess as to where to apply. Well, this is a thing of the past now. Onyx just launched Hunt Research Tools to simplify the process for all hunters. This tool helps organize the data that matters, makes comparing hunt options easy, and helps hunters develop a plan based on real metrics rather than gut feelings. OnX Hunt also offers all elite members a free digital membership to Hunt and Fool, who I use, for boots on the ground insight and knowledge, and a membership to Hunt Reminder so you never miss another deadline. Stop stressing over application season and apply with confidence in 2024. Check out OnX Hunt Research Tools, free for all OnX Hunt Elite members. Not an elite member? Well, let's fix that. Use code MEATEATER to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt. This is an app I use literally every day. I use it for every aspect of hunting, scouting, trapping, you name it.
Okay, question 6 falls under the category of potamology, or the scientific study of rivers.
Mm.
In rivers, what is the inverted V-shaped feature just above waves called?
I'm glad nobody knows this.
Sounds There's a lot of people in this room that better know it.
Oh.
Whoa.
Just I feel above. Like.
When you say above waves, you mean like upstream?
Upstream from waves, yes.
Mark's been studying how to row a boat lately.
Mark. Yeah, it's just not coming to me on this one.
In rivers, what is the inverted V-shaped feature just above waves called?
You know this, Yanni?
I believe so.
You know this, Steve?
Don't think so, but probably me.
You sound so defeated, Steve.
Steve, you've been drifting just further and further like out of the frame as the show's gone. If you just want to get close to Giannis, thank you.
Come back here, buddy. We'll hang down here at the bottom of the pile together.
Is everyone ready?
By an upside-down V-shaped feature, you mean like a wave? Yeah. Okay. It's throwing me off.
But yeah.
So there's a wave, and then above that is an upside down V.
Gotcha.
Well, no, he said upstream from the wave.
Yeah.
Not on top of the wave. So you definitely don't have this one right.
Yeah.
This could have been a visual question.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah, that would have been
I'm just
going
to keep what I got.
Yeah. All right.
You guys ready?
I'm ready.
Flip them over.
It's
Spencer says Ripples. Oh. Chester says Tongue. Mark doesn't have an answer. Randall, Riffle. Mackenzie, Precipice. Maddie, Wake. Giannis, Tongue. Steve, Trough.
That's Tongue.
Is it spelled wrong?
Spelling doesn't matter.
The answer is Tongue. From
nice,
a rower or paddler's downstream perspective, the tongue is an area of smooth water above a rapid that forms in the shape of an upside-down V. The main body of the current generally flows through the tongue and is usually the easiest and safest entrance into a rapid, unless it's pointing directly towards waves, rocks, sleepers, sweepers, suck holes, or other dangerous whitewater hazards. The first day I met the Latvian eagle, who back then was known as Long Tongue Yanni, was when we were in a raft together floating down the Eagle River during peak runoff flows with a couple of other groups of fly fishing guides. Halfway through, one of those other boats flipped completely over backwards when they rode the tongue of Dead Cow Rapid straight into a 10-foot standing wave. Everyone survived, but an older guide named Jay Corsetti was missing for a while before he eventually emerged with a bloody head wound. Do you remember that day, Giannis?
I do.
How long is a while? Like seconds, minutes?
He was out there for minutes.
Cool.
What restaurant did Yanni work at where he earned the moniker Long Tongue Yanni?
It's a Mexican restaurant, right?
Tuscanini's.
Oh. Is that a Mexican place?
Not Mexican.
Okay. I've got a great story about a river wave tongue. That
well, Steve's
almost
probably
ended
not
my
interested,
career.
So you know, it's up to him.
You're not going to tell it?
It's too long.
Oh.
But he's just letting you know that he has.
He's just going to titillate.
I'll tell you later.
Someday someone's going to be like, hey, man, do you know anybody with a long story about river tongues?
Actually.
It could mean a lot of money. I'd be like, yeah, you know I do. Let me try to find his number.
Now, Steve, I was expecting you to get that one.
No. So bitter.
I didn't.
You didn't. Okay.
Got four more swings here.
Here's a fishing question. A fishing question for your guys. Togue is the name Mainers use for this game fish.
Oh.
Hmm.
This might be a dumb question, but are Mainers people from Maine?
That's right.
Okay. Wasn't sure if it was like some other
people named Maynard. How many Maynards do you know?
Zero.
Shouldn't I let Elon Musk put that thing in my head?
Phil did predict before this show that there would be multiple zero percenters. I think we've achieved that.
So Phil was able to look and think that this is a toughie?
He did, yes.
Hmm. Nice work, Phil.
Well, I
pegged it.
I also thought Giannis had a really great batch of questions, and that didn't pan out very well. I mean,
and you learned from that.
I did, yeah.
Apparently I didn't.
Still time.
If I remember correctly, when I hosted, it was pretty on par.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows. Steve's a good host.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I added that little.
You like that phrase. You did that when we did the Two Truths and a Lie at the Billings Live Show. You were insistent that every story had to start with, everybody knows.
Well, it's sort of like poking someone in the chest right before you.
Because when you don't, it's like a little, it's like a little nut tap when you don't. You know?
Everybody knows like, Togue is the name for Mainers used for this game fish.
Well, you got to follow it up with something people don't know, because then they're like, shit, I know that. Well, it really puts them in a bad mind frame.
I can follow it up.
It's like psychological warfare to do that.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Yanni works.
You guys ready?
Spencer's going to make a change here.
Chester's going to get it.
Chester's changing it up, too. Okay, flip them over. Spencer says striped bass. Chester says smallmouth. Bass. Mark, Atlantic salmon. Randall, flounder. Mackenzie, trout. Maddie, salmon. Giannis, burbot. Steve.
No.
Giannis, striped bass. Steve, burbot. Another zero percenter, people. The answer is lake trout.
Wait, I said trout?
Not lake trout. Lake trout's not a trout.
In other areas,
goes back to fox and turtles.
In other areas, lake trout are also known as Mackinaw, Siskiwet, paper bellies, gray trout, forktails, Lakers, and Steve's favorite, grease balls. Lake trout, which are actually a species of char, are native to much of Canada, Alaska, the Great Lakes, and northern New England. A 102-pound lake trout was netted by a commercial fisherman in Saskatchewan. In 1962, but the official world record for an angler-caught Laker is a 72-pound fish taken from Great Bear Lake in 1995. However, lake trout have been widely introduced throughout the western United States, and on May 5th, 2023, a Colorado angler fishing on Blue Mesa Reservoir landed and released a potential new world record lake trout weighing over 73 pounds.
So why do they call them togue? Do we know?
I don't know. It's just what they call them.
They just talk funny up there.
They tug.
Boy, sorry, guys. Really, really feeling bad now.
We're learning, like Yanni said.
Okay, question 8. I guess this is a gear question with a little bit of history thrown in for good measure. What is the name for the hooded pullover coats favored by indigenous Arctic cultures?
You got this one, Randall?
Yes.
All right. Getting on the board.
Still anyone's game.
Anybody's game.
I mean, as long as you don't change your answer.
No, I'm going to see it anyway. I was just joking because I want to get one right.
Mark, aren't you glad you came all the way from Michigan for this?
He's winning.
Oh, yeah.
He's winning.
You're right.
I think Chester might be tied.
If he wins, it's going to be like such an asterisk next to the win.
For the lowest score ever.
No, it's not. It's still a win.
No, I feel like that's a bigger win of everything.
Brody's defending the integrity of this contest.
Spencer won with 4. No one's questioning his win.
I think that the stats guy needs to, right now, as he's listening, think, okay, down the line, he needs to remember that every time we use these zero percenters to see how much we retained, to see how well we learned today, how much of this information.
What sort of learning we had?
Mark, you still thinking, or you got an answer?
I have an answer. It's wrong, probably, but.
All right. Well, pull out your answers. Go ahead. Spencer says a robe. Chester says parka. Mark says parka. Randall says anorak. Mackenzie says parka. Maddie, fur coat. Giannis, anorak. Steve, anorak. Wow. You guys did really well.
Oh, yeah. Hey!
So anorak.
The old winners kind of got that one.
Anorak comes from the Inupiat word anorak. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Whalers who frequented the Greenland coast during the 1800s borrowed the word and adopted it into their language, spelling it A-N-O-R-K. Their waist-length pullover coats with a hood, usually resistant to rain. In Arctic cultures, they're often made with animal skins, and the hood is generally lined with fur. Commercially produced anoraks are also available, though they can't be considered anoraks if they're longer than waist length or have a full-length zipper or buttons. That would be a parka, which is also a word with indigenous origins from the Aleutian people.
You want to talk about a hard garment to get into, man.
Yeah, but there's got to be a reason why they like them.
If it's not roomy.
Yeah.
I mean, they're great warm, but if they, you know, they got to be cut a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. A little baggier.
Well, it's just like, you're like,
yeah.
You put one on?
For you listeners, I just did a motion where I put my, I used to have one.
And then what
happened? Well, they make synthetic ones.
Uh-huh.
I've had a couple of them. I like them once you got them on, until you got to take them off. But while it's on.
Can you use the bathroom while you're wearing it?
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't impede that.
You can you can go to the bathroom while you're wearing anything. So
I mean, a hoodie is pretty much an anorak.
Yeah. Right. Do you take your hoodie off every time you go to the bathroom?
Well,
I think they usually have.
I heard something about waist length, and I couldn't remember if they go longer than your waist or shorter than your waist.
I know two guys that have some kind of psychological problem.
Uh-huh.
Where
are they in this
only
room?
Two?
Well, this particular psychological problem. Where if when they need to defecate, they need to take all of their clothes off.
You know two people like that.
That's amazing.
Now and I feel like we all know people.
It came up in the same conversation where someone has it and was talking about having it, and they named another person.
Did these gentlemen leave their like boots and socks on?
They gotta get all the way.
You're serious.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Yeah. I asked a lot of questions.
That's tough when it's cold out.
Yeah, what if they're at like Home Depot when it happens?
Maybe they don't do it at that point in time. Okay. The way they explain
they have a lot of stories of being in Home Depot or at a zoo and going, uh-oh, and then it is just like put the siren on and 90 miles an hour to the house.
Did they live in a warmer climate? Is that explaining it? I think we're looking at one of them right now.
That's a great observation.
I mean, wow. It's starting to all make sense now.
Phil, we've got two questions left. How's it looking?
Well, we've been saying it's anybody's game, and it truly is anybody's game.
That's the way I like it.
Yeah, did this on purpose. We got Maddie and Mackenzie with 0 points. Yeah. Randall, Spencer.
I thought he doesn't say when they got a zero.
Well, no, they're still in the game.
Still in the game with 0 points.
So it's quite relevant.
Randall, Spencer, and Steve all have one. And tied up in first place with 2 points apiece are Mark, Giannis, and Chester, the Cricket Floyd.
Boy, he's quick, isn't he?
Yeah. I knew that was coming.
Chirp, chirp. Well, the other problem with it is that's not specific because there are dozens of species of crickets.
No, I mean, it was bad. I should have just said it was a joke, but, you know, that was honest.
You might have been better off going like, nah, I was just kidding.
Yeah. He'll tell us that later. It's actually a really long con where the joke is evolving.
Okay, question 9. This next question is an audio question, and it's also our listener question of the week from Shane Lewis. For sending this great question, Shane is going to get a board game signed by the crew. If you want a chance to win the listener question of the week, then send your question to trivia@themeateater.com. Ready, Phil?
We're ready.
When courting females, the male of this species of North American migratory game bird makes a vocalization called a peent. What bird is it?
You gonna play it?
Yeah.
Play it again for you.
Might be another round.
The male of this species of North American migratory game bird makes a vocalization called a peent. What bird?
Excuse me. Man. Could you play it for a third time, Phil?
I got a 50.
Why not?
Oh, nice. Okay, now I got it.
Yep. Jess is going to be like, crickets. He's like, this time I mean it.
I could fall asleep to that soundscape. That was nice.
Yeah, there's a couple other things getting it in the background. That's the thing when I go living in the arid West, when I go back home.
All the night, background noise?
You're like, oh my God, it's loud at night.
That's a clue.
Or tropical places.
Kind of.
Shh.
You guys got your answers?
I just mean there's a lot, like in the Michigan and the swamps, it's a lot louder than it is in the dry ass prairie.
That's all right. You guys can take the clue. You guys ready?
Let's show them.
Spencer says sandhill crane. Chester says woodcock. Mark says coot. Randall, coot. Woodbill duck. Maddie, mallard. Giannis, woodcock. Steve, woodcock. The answer is woodcock. The noise you're hearing is a peent, the mating call of the male American woodcock. It is often misidentified as a frog because woodcocks breed near swamps in the spring, roughly the same time spring peepers become audible. The American woodcock is distributed throughout southeastern Canada, much of the eastern United States, the Great Lakes region, and they tend to hang out in woody, brushy areas with moist ground where they feed primarily on earthworms. Another little tidbit about woodcocks is since they're small, they're usually plucked and roasted whole. Esteemed French chef Auguste Escoffier cites the woodcock as the king of all game birds in Le Guide Culinaire, which was the inspiration for a book called The Scavenger's Guide to Haute Cuisine that was by some obscure author whose name I can't remember.
I really like that book.
Yeah, it's a good book.
I wouldn't have guessed that a woodcock was migratory, so I've learned another thing.
You want
thing
a little factoid?
Yeah, I know. Embarrassing.
Keep bringing it.
I almost ridiculed him for a while, but I'm not doing that good.
Woodcocks migrate south in the fall, north in the spring. According to Project Upland, woodcocks migrate as individual birds rather than flocks. And the average migration distance is about 900 miles, but some have been documented migrating as far as 2,000 miles. So there you go, Randall.
You ever see them do their flight during the breeding season? It's crazy.
I haven't, but Leopold very nicely wrote about it in San County Almanac.
I saw it maybe more than once, but one very memorable time when there was quite a number of them doing it. It was cool.
And like you found the spot.
Yep. It was on a gas pipeline where Staple Road hits Blue Lake Road and Staple. There's a gas pipeline. It flows through a little swamp back there, and we were back there, and they're just going off. It was cool.
If I remember right,
we went back there, and we couldn't find them doing it.
Yeah. I feel like they're often a consolation prize for rough grouse hunters because they're real easy to hit.
If I wrote Timber Doodle, would you have given it to me?
Oh, yes, yeah. For sure. That was another tidbit, but Phil doesn't want me giving a lot of tidbits.
You know, in one of our cookbooks, we show how to truss a woodcock on its own beak.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that's fun.
You turn his head around and skewer it through his thighs, and so he's this little trussed package. Like, he's on a little skewer, but it's his own little bill.
I can't say I've ever eaten
Sad when you think about it.
You can't overcook them. They get livery.
Yeah.
Skewered on your own bill. That's horrific. That's what we should call this episode.
Listen, I had a plan for a tiebreaker. That's
skewered
why I did
Skewered on
this.
Your own
Is Yanni bill. Winning?
Yeah. It is a tie between Chester and Giannis. They have 3 points apiece. Oh. Mark and Steve have two.
Okay. This last question is more cool things about antlers.
Ooh, I like it.
On a moose antler, name the gap between the palm and the brow tines. That's also a name for a feature found on lakes and oceans.
Oh why did you have to throw?
Doesn't seem like it helped anybody.
That last little tidbit didn't need to be in there.
You're given...
You knew it just from the antler question, huh?
Yes!
Where'd you
The things
about
you learn
that?
After you shoot a giant moose, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Name the gap between the palm and the brow tines. It's also a feature found on lakes and oceans.
Marianas. I'm going to marry Giannis.
Now he's trying to throw down.
I'm going to marry Giannis.
Steve,
it's not surface, is it?
Do you have two right now?
Giannis is taking his sweet old time over there.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't even know. Even picked up his board.
Should probably read that question carefully.
Chester, do you know?
Yeah, how are you feeling, Chester?
50-50.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good for this round.
Steve the only one to kill a bull moose in here? I think so.
I've killed a Shiris, but...
What do you mean, but? That's a moose.
It was a cow.
Yeah, I'm just thinking it. Didn't get it scored, or it's just kind of a funky.
I've never gotten one scored.
Did it have palms and brow tines?
Yeah.
You didn't actually get your last one scored?
Actually, it didn't have.
Never got one scored.
It had a weird split.
No one cares about that. Instead of what you care about is, it's just like, it's how wide was it? Do you know what I mean? If you told someone. I'm sure there are people, but for the most part, I don't think that anyone would know what you're talking about.
I have no idea how they score.
Yeah, you'd be like, how many brow tines and how wide was it? Mm.
You guys ready? Reveal your answers. Spencer says trench. Chester says bay. Mark says bay. Randall says inlet. Mackenzie says mouth. Maddie says peninsula. Giannis says bay. And Steve says bay. The answer is bay. What's that mean for
That
us?
Means Chester and Giannis are going to a tiebreaker.
Right. Did you see how I
well, I was
I got
already
him.
Thinking that.
You see how
was
I got
anyway?
Him? By saying Mary, I'm going to marry Giannis because the Marianas Trench, it entered his little head.
Yep. According to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, on an adult boom moose, the bay is found between the
Phil,
main
Phil, put me
palm.
Down for a point for that. Forget
it. Yep, you got it. The bay is found between the main palm and brow tines or brow palm. Okay, exciting. Big tiebreaker.
I almost
here.
Went with inlet. Almost.
I almost went with bay. Wouldn't have done me any good.
Okay, Spencer, I didn't know this was gonna happen, but is there something I need to say here? What happens next kind of thing?
Going to a tiebreaker. Play the drop, Phil. Something like that.
Oh, no, that's the wrong one. I'm so sorry.
Tiebreaker.
You ain't first, you're last.
Tiebreaker. I think just cut it at if you ain't first, you're last, and then like go into other stuff that's funny. I never liked it. Hey, Phil, f*** off, man.
You know when your kid does something really disappointing and they look at you and you're like, God damn it. When I look at you, that's what I'm feeling. Like. Here we go. Here's the tiebreaker.
Come on, Chester.
Here is the tiebreaker. What year was the multi-tool company, the Leatherman Group, founded?
I'm going to play along.
You know, I almost to play put along my Leatherman can, in my pocket.
You can earn a little extra money if you play along and get it exactly right.
Hmm.
Spencer's throwing in an extra hundo if you're on the dot. What year was the multi-tool company, the Leatherman Group, founded?
Down to Yanni and Chester, right? Chester's one victory came at the Billings live show, so he has yet to win in the podcast studio. Yanni, I'm sorry, but I'm pulling for Chester. I hope
you
he
should.
Wins here.
You might
Chester,
be disqualifying
it also,
yourself.
It also
from
came
that.
Down to a tiebreaker.
Hmm. Chester needs another dub.
Everyone ready?
I gotta guess.
That's all
I'm doing.
It's all going to conservation.
You got to dip in right now?
Yeah.
Chester.
That might be his qualifier.
Yeah.
He's juicy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, flip him over. Spencer says 1929. Mark says 1918. Randall says 1922. Mackenzie says 1892. Maddie says 1943. Giannis says 60. Oh, Steve says 1990. Giannis says 1961. Chester says 1945. The answer is 1983.
I won.
Yanni wins.
Giannis wins.
I'm not mad. I won the tiebreaker.
The company was founded in the spring of 1983 by Tim Leatherman. The Leatherman Tool Company first launched their first multi-tool, the PST, that same year and received an order for 500 tools from Cabela's.
Can we tease people that wrote things a long time ago since the founder is still alive?
What do you mean?
Oh, how were we supposed to know that?
I don't know.
Sorry. Steve just wants to be mean.
Well, as everybody knows.
I just feel like doing something mean to people.
There you go. Yanni wins.
Giannis, let us know where that money's
Let's
going.
Let's go and keep on the streak that we've been on and give it to Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management. I just read they're the ones that are fighting Ballot Initiative 91, which aims to outlaw the trophy hunting of all cats in Colorado. And I just read today that down to SCI convention, or no, yeah, SCI convention that just happened in Nashville, that the Alaska chapter kicked down 20K to help out that organization. Yeah.
That's and then, nice because they'll never have to worry about, well, they might have to worry about that kind of stuff in parts of their land. It'll be the last state to go to hell.
Yeah.
Wyoming will be around for a while.
Yeah. So that'll be second last state. Yeah.
I think that points to, though, that people outside of Colorado think this is a very serious issue. Mm. And so even if you are a Maine togue fisherman, you might consider donating $5 to the Colorado's for Responsible Wildlife Management. I believe it's SaveTheHuntColorado.com.
If I was Yanni, I would have found out a way to find a group that was going to pay his vet bills and donate to that.
Yeah. I do need that too.
Yeah.
And on that note,
you guys are going
to
remember
You're
this
like,
episode
Coloradans,
forever.
Coloradans to save my vet bill.
The special 99th episode. Episode 100.
You'll remember it forever.
Thanks, Brody. That was very enjoyable. It was a tough one, but I did learn a lot.
And our winner got to 4, so then it's on par with Yanni hosted. So there we go.
That was a great game.
All right. Like I said, next time you invite me to host, softballs, baby.
Okay.
It's going to be a good
Ready.
One.
It was batting practice. It was nothing but crickets.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks, Brody.
Thank you, Brody.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.